God says in the prophet Isaiah, I will give you the treasures of darkness and riches hidden in secret places, so that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who call you by your name. The treasures of darkness. Perhaps not a pairing of words that we hear very often. Barbara Brown Taylor, who is an Episcopal priest, a professor, prolific writer, preacher, wrote a book called Learning to Walk in the Dark. She starts out her book with this excerpt from Isaiah and begins a long meditation on what darkness means. As she thinks through, she struggles to find an example in our everyday life and in the life of our church where we use darkness in positive ways. Often, even in the scriptures, we see that darkness is associated with a lack of knowing. Perhaps it is a punishment, as when one is cast into the outer darkness. Perhaps it is the absence of light. We so often say in our Book of Common Prayer, the light of Christ in the world. And so as she wonders about darkness, she starts by looking around her. She lives in rural Georgia, in a place where there isn't a lot of artificial light. And as she walks through the darkness, around her house to her chicken coop, she realizes how comfortable she's become walking in that darkness. And what she realizes looking around her at the natural world is that every day is filled with darkness just as it is with light. After all, after the sun sets, the moon rises. Day and night are both integral parts of what it is to be human, what it is to be in this world. And so she writes, in thinking about this, that as she asked people what darkness was to them, some people asked, well, are you talking about depression? And she said, well, yes. And they said, well, are you talking about actual darkness, like literal physical darkness? And she said, well, yes. And in her observations of talking to people about this, she writes, in the full light of day, darkness becomes the most convenient place for them to store all their shadows, their fear of the unknown, their anxiety about the future, their loathing of their own helplessness, their bottomless dread of death. If darkness really does bring such phantoms out of hiding, I think that is because the bright distractions of daytime have come to their natural end. When the sun goes down, it is time for another natural thing to happen, as the slower, quieter, and more tactile rhythms of nighttime open doors that remain shut during the day. No doubt there are some frightening things behind some of those doors, but there are also stunning things. Eventually, with some practice, one learns that all these doors open on the same room. I form light and create darkness, God says through the prophet Isaiah. I make weal and create woe. The way most people talk about darkness, you would think that it came from a whole different deity, but no. To be human is to live by sunlight and moonlight, with anxiety and delight, admitting limits and transcending them, falling down and rising up. To want a life with only half of these things in it is to want half a life, shutting the other half away where it will not interfere with one's bright fantasies of the way things ought to be. She asked the question then of us, have we forgotten how to walk in darkness? And this is something that I have had heavy on my heart as well, as I, like you, continue to be barraged by the news, by the world, by the state of suffering that we find around us. Because the bad news is, things have been terrible before. And the good news is, things have been terrible before. So what are the ways in which we are called to live through hard times, to mine these treasures of darkness, as we read in Isaiah? So what is darkness to you? Barbara Brown Taylor defines it as, yes, all of that. All of those places that we feel that fear, that unknown, that anxiety, perhaps even that shame, that dread of death, our fear, where our fears coalesce both real and imagined. And the question for us is, do we try to avoid this darkness? Do we try to avoid these uncomfortable feelings? Or do we try to learn from them? Fear and the fear of failure can keep us locked into safe activities in which we know we'll succeed. I found this quite personally in something that you all have had the grace and kindness to watch me struggle through this past year, that is singing in the service. You may have noticed my voice is a little off today, even speaking, so I'm not going to try to sing the Eucharist for you, but I'm coming for it again. Don't you just wait. Thank you, Deborah. When I started out, I didn't realize that I was going to have to sing in public, solo even. And I remember in the early conversations about it, Matt and others asked, well, will you be singing this? And I said, well, no, definitely not. Because I knew from the time I was a child and people told me that I couldn't sing, I knew that I couldn't sing. And it wasn't something that kept me up at night. It was just a thing. I'm good at other things, and I was very at peace with singing not being one of them. But they said, you know what, the sound of your voice, the way that you talk, we think that you can maybe do this. Why don't you just give it a shot, and we'll see. So I thought, okay, all right, I'll give it a shot. And now looking back, I should have just blown it, and then I would not have to have done it. I wouldn't have had to do it more times. But they heard me, and they said, you know what, you can sing. You can do this with some practice, because everything takes practice. You can do this. Oh. And it's been a year of practicing on my own, practicing with teachers, working slowly through this. And what I've found is that this seems like such a small thing, and in so many ways in the world today it is, right? But for me, it has been a kind of darkness to walk through, not because of the singing, but because of everything it's brought up within me. The insecurity, the shame, the messages of a lifetime of being told that you weren't good at something. The anxiety and the fear that come from doing something that you will likely fail at in public. Even last Sunday when I sang, I was the most confident that I've ever been standing before you. And by the end of it, I don't know if you can tell because I have all these vestments on, but my legs were shaking. And I don't mean metaphorically. Every time I do it, it is scary. And every time I do it, it is a little bit less scary. But more importantly, the gifts, the treasure that I have found through going through this is that I liked the idea of vulnerability. I rather liked the idea of needing one another in community. I liked to preach about these things. And yet, when I was called to live into them in front of you all, with you all, my legs were shaking and I was terrified. And so you all reached out to me. You offered me kindness. You told me that I wasn't hired as a priest because of my singing abilities. Thank God. You told me that it didn't matter, that as long as I showed up and tried, it was going to be fine. You showed me that you were willing to hold my vulnerability and be kind to it and love it. And that is such a precious treasure from that darkness that I don't think I would have found any other way than through struggle, than through real fear, not just sort of trying hard things that aren't really hard but might look hard on the outside, but really having to stand in a place of discomfort and fear. That is a treasure of darkness. How do we make peace with our fear long enough to move past it? How do we, instead of seeing our fear and then avoiding it, moving away from it, how can we see our fear and greet it, perhaps as an old friend, and then walk alongside it to where God is calling us to be? Because as Barbara Brown Taylor reflects, darkness and light are both part of day. They are both part of God. And if we can see them, perhaps not in these weighted moral terms of failure and success, but rather of what it is to be human, a whole human, which is light and dark, how can we face these emotions and let them flow so that we are not bound by them? Barbara Brown Taylor writes about overcoming that which frightens us. She turns to a psychologist named Greenspan. And Greenspan, ooh, little mic difficulty here, there we go. Barbara Brown Taylor writes, Greenspan says that painful emotions are like the Zen teacher who whacks his students with a flat board right between their shoulder blades when he sees them going to sleep during meditation. If we can learn to tolerate the whack, better yet, to let it wake us up, we may discover the power hidden in the heart of the pain. Though this teaching is central to several of the world's great religions, it will never have broad appeal since almost no one wants to go there. Who would stick around to wrestle a dark angel all night long if there were any chance of escape? The only answer I can think of is this: someone in need of blessing. Someone willing to limp forever for the blessing that follows the wound. What such people stand to discover, Greenspan says, is the close relationship between individual heartbreak and the brokenheartedness of the world. While those who are frightened by the primal energy of dark emotions try to avoid them, becoming more and more cut off from the world at large, those who are willing to wrestle with angels break out of their isolation by dirtying their hands with emotions that rattle them most. She continues on that the best way, then, when we are feeling afraid, is to find other people who also feel afraid. To find communities that have long practice of dealing with despair and darkness. For me, that has meant reaching out past time to the theologians of World War II to ask them what they did when faced with such darkness in our world, when faced with such unknown. What treasures did they find? And as I worked on this sermon, I had several pastoral visits this week. And what was interesting was all of these people at various stages of struggle, various times of darkness in their lives, every person that I met with spoke with tenderness and amazement at the ways in which they have drawn closer to God through this experience. One of our parishioners grabbed my hands, and in a moment of clarity, her eyes bright, clarity which is becoming more and more fleeting, she said, "You know, it's just easier to let things go now." She said, "When I was young, I used to hold on to things so tightly and probably annoyed everyone around me. But now, at this point in my life, this twilight of her life, she looked at me with open hands. And she said, it's just easier to feel God's presence now that I've let go." Offering me her treasure found in darkness. Because walking through darkness does something that walking through light just simply does not. It can be a way of finally surrendering, deepening our relationship with God as we move past our own ego, our own self-sufficiency, and need to control, into deeper relationship, trust, faith, and resiliency in God. This is something that our Christian saints and mystics understood well, that this surrender is a precious treasure of darkness. And that this realization that the most energy is spent, the more suffering is caused by avoiding the darkness, by trying to get away from it instead of learning to walk in it. And so, my brothers and sisters, yes, the events of this world are terrible. And if they don't break your heart, you're probably not paying attention. These are difficult times that we live in. And how can we look for the invitation within that? The invitation to find these treasures of darkness that are available now. In our lives, individually, in our country now, may we find and hold on to those treasures together. Amen.